Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, August 10th, 2017. With me today, I have Jeff Butts. How's it going, Jeff?
It's going great. How are you?
I am doing well. And from the MacCast, Adam Christensen, how are you today?
I'm okay, other than Skype issues, but we're good.
Yeah, well, I like to call that Tuesday or Thursday, or Monday.
Or the other weekday.
The other weekday. Yeah. It's the rule of thumb is if you're going to have a problem with Skype, it will be on a day that ends in a Y. Is that true?
Yeah.
Very likely, yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Anyhow, well, I'm glad we've been able to sort out the weird technical issues and we're all here. And let's just hop right into it. So before we got the call up and running, we were chatting some about the HomePod firmware.
Yeah.
That was leaked. And we've talked about the firmware and what's been coming out of it on the show periodically. And just on a side note, now we know more supposedly about the home button on the iPhone 8, the virtual button.
Yep.
But that's not the big thing that I want to discuss with this today. It's that this firmware's out here, and how did this happen?
Yeah, why does it keep leaking? Why are there so many little tidbits about the iPhone 8 in this HomePod firmware? And more importantly to me, how would Apple let this happen? Because I can't imagine that the team or the engineers or the people at Apple are not, you know, are naive and don't think that developers, especially, you know, our friend Steven, mm-hmm. aren't going to be like, pouring through looking for this stuff. So right. Why is it not more hidden is kind of where my confusion is coming into play. Like, why is there so much leaking out of this one source?
Okay. So first, Steven, you're referring to, I'm assuming, is Steven Trotten Smith.
Correct.
The developer. Yep. And he's been great at sifting through this firmware. So I think I have reasonably reconstructed what happened. So I have a hypothesis.
Okay.
And my hypothesis is that Apple is at the point where they have their own employees doing HomePod hardware testing. You know, like trusted employees are taking these things home. And so as they come up with bug fixes and just the other stuff that they do as they're beta testing this device, there needs to be new firmware pushed out to these test HomePods.
Right.
The firmware, we know that HomePod is running a version of iOS. Just like the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple TV, the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. So this this focused version of iOS apparently it has a lot of the same code that you're going to find on all of the other devices as well.
Right.
So what I think happened was a firmware that's supposed to be pushed out to test HomePods that are off-site was unintentionally posted as a publicly accessible thing.
Hmm.
And developers saw it and quickly downloaded it. So they've got the entire firmware, at least that snapshot version of it, so that they can comb through it at their leisure. And I think that it was something that happened totally by accident, and whoever flipped the switch that let it be public as opposed to keeping it just a private thing, they are probably polishing up their resume right now because they don't work for Apple anymore.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. I really don't know. If I was a conspiracy theorist person, and I'm totally not, so I'm only half saying this jokingly, and I think we've talked about this too, I would say, you know, is it the kind of thing where Apple is controlled leaking sort of features to increase hype for the iPhone 8? And again, I don't believe that's the case, but I was having a hard time coming up with any other conclusion that even made sense, because you think this would be the kind of thing that Apple would immediately make actions to shut down. And it's funny with Stephen Trotton Smith, I've often wondered this as well, is he's obviously not following the rules of the like non-disclosure for developer accounts. And it's surprising to me that Apple hasn't like reached out to him and said, hey, knock it off. We're going to, you know, probably have to disable your account. That's always another interesting thing about these leaks that I've never dug into, but often thought about.
You know, I hadn't thought about the part of threatening him with shutting down his developer account. But if Apple were to do that, to me, even though we know exactly where this firmware came from,
right,
that would be an acknowledgement that they don't want to make.
Right. Yeah. So that could be part of it. But he's definitely a prolific leaker when it comes to this, these sorts of features and things like that. And so it's always this dichotomy of there's certain people within the community that seem to be able to get away with things that maybe other people wouldn't be able to get away with. Mm-hmm. And he kind of falls in that group.
He does. And so I suppose he should be grateful to have his special position in the developer community, so to speak, right, where he can get away with sifting through leaked firmware and just rattle off all kinds of product specs for us.
Yeah. I mean, so that's where I fall back on some of this conspiracy stuff where it's like, well, maybe Apple PR, where they would normally sort of shut somebody down, there must be a certain degree of, hey, they like the hype and the excitement that this generates and creates. And so, you know, whether it's true or not, it doesn't even matter. It's sort of like, this is something that gets the community going and creates a kind of buzz for them that they're willing to say, okay, this, we don't want this going on, but we're going to kind of just turn the other way for a minute here and let this go out there because, hey, we're getting a lot of good buzz on potential new features for the iPhone, and it's creating hype and excitement, and that's going to be great ultimately for sales.
That's definitely the side effect of the leak, because Apple's getting all of this free publicity.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's the benefit for them. Now, on the conspiracy theory side, And I know when you toss that out there, you're like, maybe, but probably not.
Right.
My take is definitely not. And the reason I say that is because if Apple wanted to give us controlled leaks, the key word there is controlled. And accidentally, and I'm doing air quotes around my mic right now, accidentally letting the firmware leak is not controlled, because now anyone can sift through it and then present the information in the way that they please.
Right.
So what Apple would do if they wanted us to know features about an upcoming Apple TV with 4K TV support, what they would do is go to one of their trusted media sources and then work up a story with them and get the message out that way. So, and by work up a story, what I mean is they would craft the information that they want to provide as a controlled leak to their source, so that the information that's being presented is only what they want and from their perspective. And then that source, they spin up their own story and their own take on it. So right. It's not like Apple is dictating a story. What they're doing is tightly controlling the information that's provided to the source. And this just doesn't feel like that to me. It feels like a really bad mistake that is having very serious and negative repercussions on someone's career at Apple.
So let me ask you this. I mean, if we're going on the theory that this is a mistake, the only way I have a hard time believing that is that it doesn't feel like in the past Apple would make these kinds of mistakes. And what I'm going to throw out there is we seem to see them doing this more frequently. Maybe it's not more frequently. I don't know. I need to kind of analyze that. But just this is a thought as you were talking about that, that I started to have, because we also had, you know, like, was it a week ago or so, the whole 4K TV thing?
Yeah, but that's happened all coming over out in the UK. The same firmware.
But that was, it's not out of the same firmware, right? That was an iTunes mistake or leak. Like somebody had flipped a bit switch in iTunes.
The movies. Yes.
The movie receipts. Yeah.
Yes. You're right.
So
that was separate.
Is Apple losing some kind of control over land, and why would that be happening? And that's probably a whole nother discussion to have, but just another thing that I thought about as you were, you know, talking about mistakes and this being a mistake.
But this wouldn't be the first big mistake that they've made along these lines. Remember the iPhone that they lost?
Yes, yeah. There was that whole thing.
Yeah.
Again, conspiracy theorists will throw out that maybe that was on purpose as well, too. I don't believe it, but it's been thrown out there.
But here's the thing. Okay. If we've got evidence this year of Apple's normal procedure for releasing this sort of information, when they got those journalists together, a select group of people who they knew they could control, and told them, we've got this coming out, we've got this, and this is what you can look forward to. So it doesn't make sense to me that it's anything but an accidental leak.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that... the thing they did with the journalism bloggers that they got together earlier this year was unprecedented for Apple, but it also totally fits with they control the message.
Yes.
Yeah. And leaked firmware that's not controlled at all.
No.
So anyhow, I have learned from Dave that it's okay to emotionally support all conspiracy theories and to wear a tin hat proudly. It doesn't mean I need to believe all conspiracy theories. So I'm okay emotionally supporting a theory that Apple intentionally leaked the firmware just to get hype for the upcoming products. And at the same time, believe that, no, that's not what happened. Someone screwed up and has lost their job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, there's something else that I wanted to talk about, which is this whole subscription thing. And so, okay, so here's what has me going down this path today. First, we have the whole thing with Disney saying that they're not going to renew their contract with Netflix. So in 2019, Disney is starting their own streaming video service. And that's where you'll find the content for, well, their own movies and TV shows. That's where you'll find Pixar content. And the thing with Marvel content has been kind of up in the air, because they weren't clear exactly what was going to happen with that when they made this announcement a couple days ago. And since then, they have now said that they're considering taking all their Marvel content, which right now consists of movies and the original TV shows that they're showing on Netflix, and spinning that off into a separate subscription service.
Did they say anything about Lucasfilm content?
Lucasfilm content is very likely being spun out as well.
Oh God.
So I need to do a little more research. I didn't have time before the show to figure out, does that mean it's spun out as part of the Disney subscription, or is that spun out as a Star Wars channel?
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And then this morning, Jeff, you told me about something that I hadn't caught yet, because I hadn't launched the app yet today. And that's Ulysses, which is the writing app that I use on my iPad and iPhone all the time.
Right.
And then occasionally on my Mac. They've gone from a paid app to a subscription service.
Yeah. Are you still going to use it?
Well, I did the math, and
okay.
The answer, as of right now. And keep in mind, I've only had what, like maybe an hour to try and come to terms with this.
Oh, if that.
If that, I'm probably going to pay for it, because I do rely on Ulysses quite a bit, and it's proven to be a valuable app for me.
Okay.
But when you said, hey, this is what they just did, I had that knee-jerk reaction of, well, crap, there's another damn subscription that I have to deal with.
Yeah.
And then that was followed by, what other app can I use that I don't have to pay for? And then I went into the rational part where it's like, okay, let's break out the calculator and run some numbers. And the end result is, for me, if I do an annual subscription with the fact that I'm an existing user, so I get the 50% discount.
Right, because they are offering a migration discount.
Mm-hmm. So for me, that comes down to about $1.50 a month. That seems pretty okay to me. But it brings up the other issue that we're all facing now, which is, what's the breaking point for subscriptions for me?
Right.
I mean,
how many subscriptions can you, can each month can you have? How much, you know, even when it's micro payments, even when it's $1.50 here and $2 there and $5 there, eventually all of these add up on a monthly basis, and it's a different model than, hey, I pay once a year, once every year and a half, maybe $40 for an upgrade, or $30 or $20, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But you sort of get it in one chunk, right? And also, you, in a non-subscription model, sort of have this option of, hey, you know what? I don't have the $20 to upgrade the month the upgrade comes out. I'm going to use the old version for 2 months. And 2 months from now, I'll buy the upgrade when maybe I'm not as cash strapped or something like that. You know, people's money doesn't always necessarily come in a way that supports the outflows of a monthly subscription model. And so that's the dilemma that I'm worried about people getting into, not just people, but also the dilemma for developers, because at that point, people have to make a decision. How valuable is this app to me? And if I can't afford it this month and I let it lapse, am I going to find an alternative? Am I just not going to use it? And so I think a lot of developers are looking at subscriptions as a way to get recurring revenue back in an age where a lot of apps, especially on iOS, can't charge an upgrade price very easily for.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I think is happening.
But the long-term ramifications of that, especially for apps that I call sort of my, you know, my B-tier, C-tier apps, that may end up, I think, in the long run, harming them. Like, it seems like a solution now, but I don't know that it is a long-term solution, because people will find, for those level of apps, you know, it's those apps that you don't use every day, but maybe you use a couple times a month or once a month, that
right,
you maybe now buy, but you may be forced into a position saying, you know what, I don't get enough monthly value out of that to justify that cost. So now I'm not going to buy it at all and not going to use it at all, and I'm going to find an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Jeff, since you dropped the surprise in my lap this mm-hmm. morning, and also this is what I get for updating apps without looking at the release notes, I get other people surprising me with what just happened. Are you looking at subscription apps as something that's a viable thing for you, or as a subscription app, or as an app transitions to subscription, are you looking for alternatives?
I'm mainly looking for alternatives, simply because I guess it's no secret that I'm a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And my freelance business isn't always stable from month to month.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
So my budget,
variable income.
Yeah, I have variable income. So my budget doesn't really lend itself to subscription based apps very easily. Mm-hmm. So I tend to buy what I need, expense it, and if an app goes to a subscription-based model, I will try to find a good solution other than that app. Fortunately, Ulysses hasn't bitten me, because I've used Ulysses a few times and I don't prefer it over some of its competition.
Mm-hmm. And
I prefer a more simple solution than what Ulysses has to offer.
Yeah, and for me, Ulysses has turned out to be a really great option.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, it is. I think because I started doing Markdown with this one app, and then I tried Ulysses, and it wasn't the same. I've got my workflow already in place. I'm almost 45 years old, and I don't change easily.
No, I totally get it. And you use the app that works best for you.
Yep.
And, right. Yeah. So, Adam, how about you?
Well, so that's what you guys are alluding to is exactly what I said. That's the AAB thing. Like, I would argue that for you, Jeff, Ulysses is an A-level app. It's something you use probably on a daily basis. You use quite frequently. So, you know, you do the math and you look at the cost and you go, okay, well, that's a good value for me. You know, if it's $15 a year total or whatever, I don't know what the total amount is. But the point is like, you can justify that. You can say, okay, look, I would have been paying, you know, whatever the upgrade cost was every year, year and a half anyway. So it all works out. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole math thing that people have to do. You know, for me, it does come down to that. Like, I'm going to go on subscription for those apps that I use every day. But for some of the other ones, I'm probably going to, I've done this already. I've just looked for alternatives when something goes to a subscription. So if it doesn't fall on that A tier for me, the other dilemma that I have, and I think other people have, and I think maybe developers aren't thinking about when they choose to move to this model, is they're also now not just competing for my dollars for applications, they are competing for dollars for my entertainment. Mm-hmm. So I have Apple Music and I have, or you have Spotify or whatever that might be, and Netflix and HBO, and getting back to what we were talking about with Disney moving away, Disney's going to be in the same dilemma. Like, if I have to pay separate for my Disney content, for my Marvel movies, for my Lucasfilm movies that I want to watch, you know, that's three subscriptions. And if each is $10 a month, you know, that's $30. I don't know what they're planning on charging, but, you know, it's going to be somewhere in the range, I would imagine, of between $5 to $15 a month. You know, I'm going to probably make the choice that, you know what, no, I don't care all that much. And for the few movies that titles that I like from those properties, guess what? And maybe they're okay with this. I'm just going to, you know, outright purchase those through iTunes. So Apple is probably in a really good position in the fact that I think the alternative, at least for entertainment, is you just end up going back to, I'm just going to buy what I want. Now, if that ever goes away completely, that's a whole nother conversation to have. But you get the point, is like, yeah, it's forcing people into this decision mode. And as more and more things, not just apps, but other services, you know, cars, whatever is going to be coming in the future, that's also a subscription service, the choices are going to get harder and harder for people. And I don't know, you know, like, in the short term, I think it looks like a path to salvation for a lot of people. I worry more about the long-term ramifications for, again, developers who maybe were able to make a living under the old model, and now people are sort of cutting and looking for alternatives. So maybe it'll, you know, maybe it'll swing back the other way. I don't know. It's an interesting time, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to watch and see what's happening.
Yes, it is. And we're pretty much out of time, so we have to wrap up. But before we go, listeners, I'm really curious. How do you feel about this? I mean, have you figured out a way that works for you to manage all the different subscriptions that we're currently faced with, knowing that there's even more down the road? Let me know what you think about this. You can shoot me an email, observations@macobserver.com. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be @TMODaily. And of course, you can leave comments in the show notes. I will check all those places to hear what you have to say. And yeah, we are out of time. So, Jeff, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Adam, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, as always, thanks for having me. It's fun.
Loads of fun. Yes. And listeners, thank you for being here. We will see everyone again tomorrow. We'll be right back.